Okay. Thank you for coming. My name is Larry. I'm from the University of Texas. I've got a colleague of mine, Mr. Cummings. He's from any case. We're going to talk really about a case in the context that the case has actually occurred. I want to talk to you about information, tokens, also privacy, and this tension between international kind of statutes. Okay, next slide, thanks. My slides are going to be different from yours because I'm really a professor and I've got to ask you questions. All professors have to ask questions. It's in our gene pool. I apologize for it. Okay, so my slides are going to actually be slightly different from yours. If you want my slides, they're posted on a website at the end of the presentation. Okay? Rich. Okay, for the purpose of this, I'm really a technologist. Yes, I teach at the law school. I'm not a practicing kind of attorney. I'm really a human being. Next slide. Okay, this tutorial, there's no legal advice here. If you get in trouble, you're responsible for your own stuff, not me. I speak for no university, the government, or anybody else. There's no fitness kind of guarantee for the stuff I'm going to say. Next slide. There's no grant of license. Any risks associated belong to you. We have to go through all this legal stuff. And your attendance now, we have a contract and you agree to the terms. If you don't like it, leave. How's that? Next. Aren't I a fun guy? Okay, all the slides are over here. There is a case, I have to say, from a legal point of view, it's an emotional case. In fact, it is not emotional. But I've got to say that because I don't want them to sue me. I want to sue them. They don't want to sue me, right? Next slide. Okay, please ask questions. I want to reserve the right to ask you questions to make you uncomfortable because we only learn when we're really uncomfortable, right? Okay. This is an emerging area. Anybody who says they know everything about computer forensics, I think is wrong. I think the area, particularly in terms of technology, is moving very quickly. The issues here are not necessarily computer forensics, but digital forensics. Stuff that's electrons, ones and zeros. It's important in court that you have the idea of science, theory, and peer review. Those are the ultimate kinds of tests. But frankly, I think we need a better community of practice between computer security people. That is not just in the security area. There are also human rights issues here. There are privacy kinds of issues. And yes, there are surveillance issues. Those of you in the government, I apologize if you feel bad, but there's tensions between individual rights and surveillance. And I want to discuss this, particularly within the United States. Here on an issue that also involves some international kind of questions. Next slide. Okay, this is a ubiquity in law. Really, information technology is increasingly embedding in all of our estimated in the United States. Corporate managers, some guys at Stanford have made the estimates that 80% of the business communications that a person receives in a U.S. corporation resides in some form in a digital format. About 80%. That has web pages. Cyberspace is a ubiquitous kind of environment. We have the idea of portals for everything. Your cars talk back and forth to computer systems. Estimated that a now Ford automobile, 2003, has 7 onboard processors. That's a residual kind of data. In the U.S., automobiles record the last 7 seconds of information prior to impact of an airbag event. Most of you don't know that, but there's digital information that surrounds us all. This information has a benefit and also has a cost. Increasingly, it can be used for surveillance, law enforcement, and civil kinds of matters and administrative kind of matters. Now, as an enabler here, we need to think about the issues of digital information in both criminal, non-criminal, and prescribed activities. Corporations in America have what are called administrative rules. In other words, an AUP, an acceptable use policy. That defines the behavior that is sponsored. Sanctions. Okay. Now, I want to talk to you about a case. This case is called Baghdad Express. I'm going to read some things to you so you describe what's going on. Baghdad Express. Baghdad is a U.S.-based international oil firm. This is a misnomer, but basically, this firm doesn't really exist. An analyst that does. Smith, a real person, Ms. Smith, was in fact a pro-manager. She was responsible for financial activities for a project in a different place in the world. In this case, it's Nigeria. That may or may not be true. She's responsible. She is based physically. Her domicile is in Houston, Texas. For a statute point of view, from a legal point of view, her legal presence, her legal state is in Texas. She's based there, has to travel frequently through Amsterdam. In accordance with her contract, what you and I would call her high-risk kind of position, she has to report all foreign travel. If she travels outside of her areas, she and the she's what a high-risk position. Watch their workers. And she's in what's called a high-risk kind of position, which means she has the ability to control financial resources. She sends email, like all of us, for both business and personal reasons on her company computer. Who does this? Her job. Okay? This is for all travel purposes and really all of her communication needs. Her travel. Also to her colleagues outside the firm. I would characterize her as a power user. She uses it a lot, like many of you. Cell phone. We all use cell phones, correct? A digital camera. She has, as a power user, as many of you have these small thumb drives. Or we have these small portable kind of removable devices. Many of us buy these for convenience. Some of us, I would submit, buy this with the notion of we have privacy of information. We can carry a gigabyte around, a gigabyte of data, and we have the idea that on our device, carry it with us, it's safe. Yep. Also new voice recorders. Now, what I would characterize as many of you, she has to have, again, frequent travel to depart, and she normally makes her travel arrangements through a company travel agent. This is an interesting occurrence in the United States now post 9/11, that travel is monitored very carefully by both corporations and the United States. They do work on particular applications. How world. And some statistical kinds of models that determine your outlier characteristics. And if you're an outlier, then you automatically are subject to, how shall I say, more scrutiny. Again, she in this case actually had dual citizenship. Citizenship does not equal domicile. Domicile establishes jurisdiction, not nationality. The illusion will... That's in fact not true. Next slide. She's responsible for authorizing all disbursements and tax payments. In other words, she's the keeper of the money for a Nigerian operation. She pays taxes. She pays tax of the corporation. She's the person who signs and authorizes disbursements for operations. She's using an international ISP for remote access for her internet needs, an international ISP like AOL or MSN or something like that. Now, she has been observed making anomalous payments. This observation occurred within the company. There were payments that didn't really correspond to the business plan. These payments automatically kind of trigger some initial kind of investigative activities within U.S. corporations. She's also been observed by law enforcement in some cases, about anomalous traveling. In other words, paying for travel with cash. In the U.S., that automatically triggers a unique occurrence. Buying one-way tickets, automatically occurrence. Frequent travel to what are perceived to be high-risk areas. Frequent. They have, by public announcement, observation systems that automatically determine someone is doing anomalous things. An anomalous being, how does the government define anomalous? Not normal. So we have normal, not normal. Okay. And of course, they are monitoring kind of traffic on information. Next slide. So law enforcement automatically picked up Ms. Smith. Next slide. In accordance with U.S. Sarbanes-Oxley, a federal statute, a U.S. law, not something that somebody kind of cooked up, But basically, an internal investigation is initiated because of the strict issues of strange payments, non-authorized payments, the company elected to do what we would call an internal investigation. They met the legal barrier of probable cause. Wait a second. Probable cause means this is not normally expected in the firm, and that is the threshold barrier for what you and I would call probable cause. An informant in the firm rats out Ms. Smith, says, wait a second, this woman is being paid X. She's living in a large home. Her lifestyle is larger than average. And someone in the firm, under Sarbanes-Oxley, you can actually inform on someone by saying, and was conducting illegal stuff. That gives you a legal defense for defamation of character if you have a reasonable cause. So the firm then decides, in this case Baghdad Express decides, let's go ahead and start auditing your call patterns. Most of you are aware of PBXs, our company on property. They by definition have the right to audit. You have no expectation of privacy in the United States about making PBX calls from a firm. None. Zero again. Okay. They use a tool most of you are familiar about called WebSense, which is a content filtering, and I think the term smart filter, isn't that the term, but proprietary, smart, yeah, proprietary, and traffic analysis at the gateway. In other words, the classic thing that many of us think about, I think you heard a discussion today about good old terrorism, who terrorists talk to. In this case, they've morphed the model of who are business people talking to, and who. Next slide. What happened in this case, interesting kind of decision was debate in the computer forensics profession. Many of us feel that computer forensics, because it's really a control function, should not be done internally. In other words, at a certain level when you do an investigation, to make sure you have a disinterested party. Operations have an disinterested investigation. Investigator skill available. This is not future stuff. An incredible advanced kind of forensic. Something called a remote preview. Now you and I know that in computer forensics we used to talk about the idea of doing a physical seizure. You bust the door. Tags on, we'd act real cool and all that kind of stuff. But that used to be the model. We've gone away, and we'll show you. Wait a second. We want to do what we call a preview. We want to see items of interest. Items of interest can be stuff that is the. Many of you have AEPs that say you cannot use within a company, you cannot use your own position. In this case, we want to do a preview. Now, the old way was coming by and grabbing the device. The second old way by my government law enforcement colleagues here, we do what's called a black bag job. We would invite someone to a long meeting, get them out of the office, and we would go ahead and copy all the stuff in their computers. But it was kind of a bad deal. But now we can exploit some kind of new technology. In this case, we decided to do an initial preview, and we want to triage some evidentiary artifacts. We were looking for what I termed in this case a suspicious application. A suspicious application being an application that you can define as something that you would normally not be expected to use in the performance of your duty. Performance of your duty. Okay, and then we did what was basically called a triage for these items, and these items were done by a disinterested consultant outside. The .rav file. And many of you know their .rav files. In fact, in a normal installation of a tablet PC, there are 39, I've counted each of them, 39 .rav files on your system. These are normal installation. You wouldn't expect a .rav file to be weird, right? You wouldn't. When you find a weird application that outputs .rav files, you go, what's going on here? Which will be a tool called system was remotely acquired using this enterprise, this in-case enterprise edition. This is not vaporware. Suspects on a tablet PC, a new state law enforcement first. If you read the statutes, you have no discretion. If there are certain types of events that occur in the legislation, you have the legal responsibility to report to law enforcement. In fact, ladies and gentlemen, it is a felony conviction not to report. A felony conviction. Felony conviction. So you have to rat them out. Then what happened in this case is an interview and a subsequent arrest by law enforcement is now being planned. What is the basis of this arrest? What is the basis? Next slide. This NBA slide. I love to use this slide. What is this case about? What is this case about? It's now the demonstration of as we can.
Very quickly, bang that audit, What I'm doing here is selecting default directories where, as an investigator, I will save findings and initiate artifacts that I identified during my pre-remote analysis of this machine. Okay, so I've done that now. So now what I want to do is add a device. Okay, and as an investigator, an in-case investigator, I am allowed to access local devices like standard forensics, attach to local machines, create an image, things of that nature. Evidence files are existing bitstream images that I've created. The Enterprise Edition. The Enterprise folder allows me to see machines in the network. My role allows me to preview. And I'm going to select this IP address, 10.10.10.11. Normally it would be a machine name, but I'm not running DNS here on my two machine networks. So this will be. The next screen that pops up is a graphical view of all the media attached to this machine, which is right here. This is Larry's machine.
If I can look carefully, you'll notice that it looks like it's enumerating the logical attributes of the suspect platform. I like to look carefully, notice that it's across the network.
The local area network. This can be done over the internet. I invite your special attention to the last logical device, which appears in this case to be a removable thumb drive. Again, a thumb drive. When the thumb drive is attached to the suspect platform, it can be enumerated. So your illusions about having security by having it on a removable device, I hope, are now shattered.
If this person, Ms. Smith, were to have a PGP disk, if she were to have that PGP disk mounted on a logical volume right now, I would see it here as a logical volume, and then I would be able to select that and preview that drive as well. So different way of looking at accessing encrypted file systems while the systems are running. So what I'm going to do is select here this physical drive number 2, and I'm also going to select this.
Case offers also logical volumes as well. But we're going to select the physical disks because you get more sectors. Usually select the physical disks. So I click next, go to network, and this little progress bar that says reading devices is going over the network. It's reading just the MFT, just the master file table.
Wow, the break region is full.
Okay. Unallocated space is a file, slack space is a file. So now that I've gotten these hard drives loaded up in my case, right here it's like a Windows Explorer graphical user interface. I can drive through the file structure as if I was mobile on that machine. Okay? And since Larry has let me know as an investigator, I'm looking for files of a certain type. What I can do is I can select every single file on both of those two physical disks, and I'm going to filter based on the file signature and extensions. So on those two physical drives, there's a total of 11,341 files. I'm going to now run a filter for WAV files or sound files. And now very quickly, in case, we'll filter based on those extensions and headers. Let me know that there's 130 WAV files. Now it's just a matter of me going through it, identifying that there's a payoff.wav file on the very top. Maybe of evidentiary interest to me. So what I can do is now identify these items. I can bookmark them, which adds them to a report. I can then call Larry and say, I have identified some of these artifacts that you're looking for. Would you like me to do an acquisition? So then what I can do is I can select both of those physical disks, right-click, and say acquire. And now what NCase would do is it would give me a bitstream image, a snapshot time of that live system. Now, the system is changing because it's still running, but I'm getting a snapshot time of that system. If this is a liturgical case, we are planning on going to litigation after we have corporate security escort this away from the machine, you may want to do another midstream image. So you put that on file and compare that to what we're doing in that way. Any questions?
I'd like to just before kind of questions. One, when the classic kind of defense is, wait a second, you copied this across the wire, therefore there could have been data change. Well, NK says actually hash the drive. Hashing has proved to be both from a criminal perspective and a civil perspective, both in U.S. and international courts, to be an acceptable message integrity tool. There is no question the traffic is actually forensically hashed, and in fact, ladies and gentlemen, it is encrypted as it goes across the wire. So if we forensically acquire a system in Amsterdam from Houston, Texas, there is no possibility that the data could have been contaminated. Well, we can pull Trojans down also. Yep.
This doesn't prove that the suspect in some cases proved that something on the machine.
Not yet. Not yet, but give me a chance. Give me a chance here, because the golden rule in forensics, I want to tie a person to a platform, to an application, to a data stream over time. Your network is going to cross the network. Your hard drive is going to be kind of busy, but it's not that busy because remember, the preview, it's just looking at the MFT, master file. Yes, it goes through a reserve port. Well, what we need to do is because the kind of stuff is my turn. And one of the case points I want to make here in just a moment is there's a tension. Just because we can do it doesn't mean it's right. Just because we have the technical capability. Side. This is a good thing, because I don't want to necessarily have to get on an airplane and fly to Bongo Bongo to a new...
Any other questions?
those are, you know, proprietary file system that you could use VMware as an external viewer to mount those file systems. But we see it as one file, but we can't read it too much.
There's a voice function. I'm going to describe it as that hash sets are generally available. In fact, the United States government organizations provide hash sets for free. You can hash a tablet PC that says 979 zone files. The normal standard installed tablet PC by 979 files. Now those files can be hashed. If you have a good hash number, there's no reason to investigate. It's one of my files that are either known good or good or known bad. So notice at the bottom, you've actually required it. This is the full content of the hash. Does antivirus software recognize this as being something else?
No, thank God. No, not yet. I mean, we don't look at it as a spyware to, you know, we don't do keystroke logging yet. That's a joke.
Now, there are some interesting things that I want you to be aware of. This tool, this tool is actually doing live state forensics. But it's really now looking at file instances in the system. It does not look at processes. So those of you that want to look right at rootkit and run the memory, it's not observable yet, but I have confidence in you. So it's my job to defend that in court or attack it.
Any other questions?
Yes, sir.
Well, surely, when you're stopping a machine, in some point of time, the victim must notice that there's some strange behavior or activity on the phone.
Why? Because companies, like, for example, when I used to work in Hewlett Packard, they used to install Tivoli stuff all the time, or these systems managers or SMS loads. And how many of you are at the console of your system all day long? Your network latency's going back and forth. How many of you really spend time on a server, on a desktop system, watching what's going on with this?
But you don't know either. For instance, if I'm in a hotel room and not on a high-speed link, connected to the internet, and you're doing your stuff, that surely must cause some suspicion.
A lot of disk activity and a lot of I.O. and stuff like that, yeah. It's nothing like an antivirus scanner, though. You know, when your antivirus kicks off, sometimes the machine will practically lock up. If you're running a P2 or higher, there is minimal process activity. There is some disk activity, obviously, but not process intensive at all.
Yes. What about you guys? Miles to go, sir.
Number one, you have to ask the question, evidence eliminator takes a lot of time. I've done experiments on seeing how well evidence eliminator works. And you really got to have a forensics tool, and at the same time you've got the evidence eliminator, then get a system, clean it up, and see what the forensics tool will find.
It takes a full-time job.
The second thing, it depends on who you really piss off. If you really piss off somebody who has a lot of money, it's pretty well known, it's widely known that even regular software tools to wipe drives can be recovered. If you read some of the affidavits, fairly clearly they've been published in some of the recent files in the United States, there is ample evidence that data can be electronically recovered. If you don't believe me, there's a forensics guy in New Zealand named Peter Gutman. He's got a very nice article about electronic remnants that basically are pretty persistent.
Well, there's also a common action on the Swiss on the methods. You have about $100,000, you buy a great time. If you piss off somebody enough, and if the board of directors is going to go to jail, they'll buy a $100,000 loss and engage in consulting program. I always get asked this by the NDA. Well, Dr. Lieber, let's assume I'm working for an oil company and I get served with a subpoena. How can I detect my private information?
people to ask.
I mean, plus, you don't just have to invest in employees.
Specific IP address and port.
fishing, what will he see? Yeah, so if I understand the question correctly, you're an employee. We've got to serve with our machine. You want to know when I'm looking at your machine. So you turn on tiny personal firewall and turn on logging.
I don't have a personal firewall, but I have a logging or Windows XP.
Okay, so you set up logging, event logging. You'll see an event, that's it, that says that this service has been accessed. That's all. We are in a read-only mode, but there's a service listening. So the service just creates an event in the system or application event logging, that's it. No, not at all. No, because we don't use any Microsoft security. We use SERP all that security within Microsoft.
There's a danger in this problem.
Whose fingers are on the keyboard, that type of thing?
Well, imagine with your own case out of one.
Yes.
Once it's actually been tweaked, it's been a patch out there of one of the things. So it sees one thing. Okay. Which a desk you actually use, but you use a different desk and a different machine. So what it sees is fine. What you do is something else. See what I'm saying?
No, I don't understand.
I think in it, what I'm really trying to say is, you have this end-to-end server.
So,
if it's a server that's looking at your PC, looking at the desk, you have another desk which is headed from by something.
Like what means?
One of these guys is probably doing the software for them, right?
What, Area 51?
Well,
Area 51 changes the geometry of a hard drive from 20 to 10, and will tell your BIOS that the geometry has changed. Encase accesses the disk at a physical level, so it will know there is a geometry hiding tool on there. So there are some tools out there that we will not be able to
take. And I think your point is well taken. This is
yes.
In response.
And frankly, this is going to escalate. This is going to escalate, and you know, for every solution, there's going to be a hide around. And that's one of the challenges, I think, of this kind of technology. Okay?
Yeah, we do not play with that. You can have a plug your gas on there.
What if I do a port forwarding to another machine?
Very good. we do listen on a port, you know, as a service. You know, and we are registering our own port protocol with IANA. So eventually there may be an application proxy for a firewall based on this. Yeah, the network actually, we do resell machine names to the server. So when you do access a machine, yeah, I mean, I may be accessing Bob's machine, but if you do a port forward to another machine, I don't know.
Fixing again, I think this product's all about consent. I'm an employee of this business, and I consent to use this.
Well, that's the thing. If you work with an organization, they make you sign the AUP.
Yeah.
I know I signed one. When I came over with guided software, I had no proxy, right? So yeah.
You're exactly correct. It would be an implied consent. But I would also like to invite... observation. So there's this... send emails out a lot. You buy proxy servers. The proxy servers don't necessarily help within a corporation. Within a corporation, and monitor stuff like SSL, SSH, and automatically when you start using that within an organization, they say, you may be an item here. Also, anomalous money transactions. There is no question at the federal and international level, money movements are monitored. There's absolutely no question. And if you don't believe me, the U.S. versus Scarfo, where a guy was actually moving millions of dollars, laundering it out of a cigar factory in New York. He was convicted fundamentally on money laundering operations by just watching money traffic kinds of stuff. International travel experience, particularly after 9/11, are monitored very closely, not only within the United States, but internationally. We also, I think this case is about what are the implications of disk remote acquisitions. I mean, many of you may have bought a remote, bought a USB thing. I got privacy of information carried around. Well, in this environment, when I'm in a corporation, I have an AUP policy in place. Security has nothing to do with real security. It has nothing to do with it in this case. It's totally where a person in Africa says, look, tax collector, and I want you to pay me X, and I'll give you Y. Right? Now, in some societies, that's okay. That's okay. That is what business is done in the world. In the U.S., it has a way that's done. And in this case, it was a U.S. employee, the activity they Smith made the kind of decision about, well, maybe I need to be rich here, too. I mean, I'm working hard, I'm flying around a lot, maybe I need to get all this money. And responded to the book. He sent some information to this gentleman. It was actually much more simpler than that. Files. And many of you go, well, WAF files are kind of interesting. Well, when you look at a WAF file format, a tool that was not in the AUP and simply file pushed. Whereas a sound file recorded. Was found is by the application. Again, to go back to the forensics point of view, you want to tie a suspect to a platform, to a suspect application, to data over time. It's pretty nebulous. We have third graders who know how to change time on computer files, right? Right? Excellent. That's not the issue. Tonight, taken from Zurich. I want you to look very carefully at the PowerPoint file. What she's done is basically taken a picture. A picture of two WAV files. And fundamentally, she actually used a picture on top of a PowerPoint present, actually on a Word document. Stuff to do, get the shareware application. And there's Diamond Cut, which takes basically a sound file and 10,000 times. And you can actually. This case, the challenges in this particular case.
Evidence is only occurred by one place, the prior of fact, the judge, jury, or it's a case of a tribunal. Evidence is not done by forensics people, they produce what items called items of evidence. Broad test for the defendant's reliable completeness and free from interference. The completeness thing is kind of interesting because it's been tested, but wait a second, you didn't look at all the lab files in the world, so how do you know this one is bad? Well, courts have said that you didn't test this way. U.S. versus Hansen. Hansen, a former FBI agent, was an entrepreneur and decided to work for the former Soviet Republic as a spy. And Mr. Hansen actually had encryption on the system. And what his defense initially was, well, you can break all my encryption, so therefore you don't have a complete investigation. It's just that we don't have to get it off. We just have to get it off the secret encryption. So the completeness test was probably getting to be increasingly not so important. That's right.
Yeah,
want to know, the international standards go to www.iocd.org. Has a nice description about international forensic standards. What I define this kind of stuff, in this case, you've got to have demonstrated expertise. I personally feel most forensics should not be done by within a corporation, within a corporate context. I think it's better to have a disinterested kind of consultant who doesn't know this, because ultimately you have to contemplate this in your class. You have to have a disinterested kind of relationship. Yes, there was a case in Texas of a forensics investigator that didn't actually get a job on his boss's system. Not a good thing. So I have a disinterested kind of relationship. Examiner qualifications, increasingly they are asking, you cannot get this system by using the overall knowledge, skills, and experience, ASA. Well, I read a book about computer forensics, and I bought some software. I bought Lovecraft, and by the way, I did also buy a little therapy tool I bought, SLU. That makes me answer, of course, it's a time. It's also a question of the skills or increases you've done in your training you've done, and increasingly they try to test your particular kind of ability. In some Asian states, we're required to be certified. We're required to have an examination. That's particularly common in New Zealand and Australia. Processes, one of the things, this is an accepted process. Not all processes do not follow the identical procedure. Is it audible? Can you show you have chain of custody? And if you don't have chain of custody, you don't have a case. I actually heard a law enforcement agent once testify that, well, Your Honor, we couldn't find the original image, but that doesn't mean it's lost. The judge said, we can't find it, it doesn't mean it's lost. The judge says, don't ever come back to my courtroom. So it was a bad idea. Chain of custody, you have chain of custody problems, you got big time problems in terms of go find another case. Peer reviews are repeatable, and perhaps most important, particularly in the U.S., it's not what you know, it's what you can explain to the jury. Instruments, we have avoided cross-contamination. This is a particular problem in hacking cases. We've actually got a full date off of wire boxes. Finding a batch cross-validate, one of the things I hammer on is locally secure. Never trust one tool. In fact, if you're a forensic examiner, never trust anything. Use different tools to cross-validate. Prior use, how many cases it's done? In case it's been challenged before, at least 4 times I know of. But almost all forensic tools are being challenged, and you actually have to show they've been accepted previously. At base, in a final sense, a forensics evaluator, forensics person, has one duty to tell the truth. He may be paid for by a belligerent party, the defendants, doesn't matter. Increasingly in the U.S., they are what are called special masters. They are working for the judge. He has a single duty, which is telling the truth. That is the test. This is a definition. One of the great things you'll find in every court case you go to trial, they will ask you, well, what is your definition of forensics? There is no international single standard. Okay, next slide. This is the generalized framework. If, for a hypothetical person, if you work for a company and they seized your system, this is the procedure they would normally follow. And this is an interesting slide for some people. They have a contemplation of your system in the city. They deviate from this framework, you probably don't know how to remember. Protection, discover, files, unallocated spaces, key terms for searching. Now, this sounds intuitive. Then you go, this is obvious. This is obvious for item 6 and search for key terms. One of the things I can always hammer home is I want to see the physical evidence. Don't give me this one, I want to see the someone was reportedly laundering money. And they were doing all sorts of searches all day long for money. One of the things they did is they want to see you. They said, what do you want to do? I want to see you. Ladies and gentlemen, you cannot find the word money. And then they search. It's not a money. It's not a money. So I'm going to do that. That's true. I want to know who you are. But you can have multiple languages. Single box and have multiple language accounts. You could have an administrator account in Arabic, another account in English, and another account in Cyrillic alphabet. Believe me, from a computer forensics point of view, you've got to do lots of good searches, particularly if the system is Unicode compliant. You all know what that means. Not all
United States, you get the adversary kind of thing. You have to assume, when you start a forensic investigation, particularly a window to your job, and those of you that go, wait a second, I just want to be the examiner, I want somebody else to testify. And Ron, if you touch the evidence, you're going to trial. Everybody who did any work on it gets to put up a business suit and go through it. Therefore, you go through deposition. There's some problems here. You talk about double collection. A certain kind of data can alter the state. Now, this is not only computer systems, but like pilots that are Windows CE device. You seize a CE device, you get to have the experience of keeping power on it forever until it goes to trial. We also have some problems on certain types of data which is not persistent. For example, your cell phone. If your cell phone is seized, you can't hash it because that hash is only good for one moment of time. Hash it 2 seconds later, the hash doesn't match. To my knowledge, that has never been tested in the United States. But I'm confident with it. I'm confident with it. And we'll get better law in that area. Investigations in cases are really new, particularly in local in the United States. Many local law enforcement people are just kind of new to this. And I know a place in San Antonio where a computer was seized, they didn't have enough room in the luggage in the storage area. So they put it in the cops' kind of waiting area where the cops would play games on the computer system. So it's kind of new to a lot of law enforcement. These are the measures that you will normally expect to check. If you have a good attorney, let's say that you're arrested, grab this slide out and say, wait a second. For all these processes involved, are they understandable, are they sound, are they subject to kind of demonstration? You can't demonstrate it before you come down to the problem. The federal government sometimes has special tools which are called classified. They will rarely bring those to court because if you have to bring classified tools to court, you can accept peer review. They want to be classified. That's not only true in the United States. I believe that's true in two states somewhere in Great Britain. They use specialized government applications which could not be demonstrated anymore. Can a prosecutor prove that the subject person was the sole user of the platform? Well, this is kind of a challenge because with this tablet PC, you have multiple kinds of users. And the way you typically do this is by looking at full structure, by looking at the accounts served on different folders of that user. There has been one case that I've been involved in where the university decided there was someone who was using the phone. And they involved you in the phone. Every time you let someone, they have a different opinion of what pornography is. Anyway, the university was going to hire a lady, an older lady, for pornography. And I was broken into this case. And you know, you don't really have to like the kind of sense of someone who says, well, this is still kind of what you want to do. In my opinion, West Texas, that woman's going to love pornography, at least in West Texas. So there's something wrong with this picture. You start looking at the file time, these files are moving. Dallas or whatever, it's going to be 11 o'clock at night time. So I walked in the investigator and said, you guys don't have a case. He said, what do you mean? You've got a gigabyte of pornography on your computer system. We're going to roll out of the university. I said, let me tell you something. She didn't download it. What happened is she leaves the computer on and came through the computer at night while I'm cleaning up her server and getting exposed to it. That's what happened. So you have to be very careful about just because someone has an account, you cannot necessarily tie them to the workstation. And unfortunately, we have lots of overzealous prosecutors that can't wait to send all these bad pornographers to jail. Okay? Is there any way to alter or modify? This is a great one for those of you that are on the dark side. Next slide. Evidence compromising their attorney privilege. That's the great thing on the internet. Everyone has been going on for years. They say, well, wait a second, you can't have all the Lotus Exchange files because some of those files deal with suspects that are communicating with their attorney. And therefore, that's privileged communication. You can't get it. So what happens is they have to define a third party. The third party is the person who gets to and figure out which one is privileged or not. You don't want that job. You do not want that job. care what they pay, you don't want that job. So they have to have a disinterested party. The technical term of this is only a special master. His job is to determine what's privileged or not. Okay. There's no possibility that another person, network, or malicious code. This is a new area for the FBI. The FBI actually does these great searches. You ask me, would you search for viruses? No. No. Those of you who have some spare time, go to www.pestcontrol.com. There's a tool you download that actually finds marketing tools. It finds web files. It finds viruses. I've actually seen a system that was seized by the government when I was on the other side and had over 2,000 web bots, malicious applications, and viruses. And even though it wasn't stuffed in the system or not. So one of the areas we're looking at now is particularly malicious code and viruses, particularly on internet kind of traffic. Was the search lawful given the nature of the allegation? The case you saw in Baghdad Express, her attorneys were really questioning. Wait a second, this lawful search. Did you really have probable cause? Or were you picking her out because she was passed over for promotion? That's her. What's the opposite of that? Okay, I want to talk to you about tokens and tags, but I want a token in. A token is something that's intentionally put on the computer system. Y'all know what a tag is, right? It's a tag. It's not a tag. Somebody's got a question about a tag. Okay? Okay, pop open, open up. When you go home tonight, open up a JPEG picture. Okay? You'll open up the first 40 characters, 40 bytes. Actually, you'll see in most cameras something called an exit. It tags the camera that was taking the picture. The picture also reveals the date when the picture was taken from the camera. Also describes some faces being red. You open one up, you have a tag for
it. Yeah, it's
going to be that. Open up a tag for it. This will show you the Flickr camera over and over. Let's see, this is a GIF tag, or it's done by Photoshop. Now, what's excellent, Photoshop, when you touch a picture, just open it, and automatically tag it that someone is monitoring this picture. The gentleman who was killed in, let me see, was killed in Pakistan. What was the name of the
Pearl.
Pearl's picture was posted on the internet by the people who reported the killing. And actually, it showed the picture was not altered in Photoshop, and actually gave the camera ID. It gave the camera ID. And he was actually taking a picture of your picture of him. Pictures are great things and they have tagging data. And one of the great things about this state is people stuff pictures in it. Too many forensic examiners do not spend enough time looking carefully at the tags in the pictures. And this is really rich types of data that people kind of. Now, yes, some of you go, do you edit that? Yeah. They need some really proprietary tools like Excel. Cybercop.org has a listing of U.S. statutes. And you really kind of wonder who wrote those laws. Some of those laws, I think, were written by attorneys who never saw them. Okay. We also have a very nice international standard. There's some very nice privacy statutes. In fact, what I find interesting about coming to Europe, everybody bitches about the National Security Agency and doing Echelon. Well, you don't have to go very far with Echelon when you go across and look at the United Kingdom and find something called the Rights Statute, RIPA, which are kind of interesting in itself. This will basically be the ability for the government to monitor anything at one at any time. So this is not just a U.S. issue. This is
economy is an emerging issue, in my opinion, throughout the world. But you also want something really scary. Go and pick it up, if you sign up for the 26th. No question, in my opinion, pick it from the reaction to the 9/11. Pick it too, will make people want to look like it. Pick it through those congressmen that are fixed time. Their data of politician policy now is kind of interesting. The federal government has said, if you think you're doing anything illegal, don't destroy your data.
So if you think you're doing anything illegal, don't destroy your data.
So there's lots of corporations going, what's the board say about data retention policies?
What's the board? And in fact, if you're looking at them on carefully, the government now says they were publicized in 2 months. Notice.
Obsolete U.S. corrupt activities and racketeering and crime. You know about the prevailing model? And again, the focus here is finding data on files, but that's also kind of changing with doing traffic analysis. Next slide. The Patriot Act basically says that the government has the right to protect itself and basically engage in surveillance activity for both its citizens and people in the United States. Basically, the people that is pretty all inclusive. And it's worthwhile getting a cold beer and kind of saying, you know, I think it's worth it a little later than we think. They're a little later than we think. It's very Orwellian. It's you looking for people who are good interests that are empathetic. I used to think that, wait a second, we've got to have skills about, if you're going to get good in the forensics, you've got to really know a lot about platforms. It's impossible. I used to think that we have to know a lot about what the platform is. The trouble is, technology is moving very, very quickly. And the idea of being able to do forensics across all platforms is a specious, bogus idea. All people looking for good in special education. All people who have digital forensics people that can sound good. You have digital forensics people that can excavate. You have digital forensics people that can do forensics. And the areas are so complicated, particularly with the changing kinds of data. It's only going to get larger because it's not only a technology issue, it's a legal issue, and also a public policy issue. One of the challenges we get are skills and access. They used to have the illusion that you should go buy a tool to be an expert. I don't think you do that. I think you have to do something like that. You have to get training a lot because you need to use your technology to come out. You know, Windows Server 2000, Solaris, user process calls. We don't know those kinds of things. And really, the idea is, when you go to court, they're going to ask you what skills, knowledge, and experience and training you have. So the idea of being self-taught in terms of public education. We want to talk about more here in the first slide. One more. Next, we have Tablets. Tablets are really interesting. In fact, for a money laundering tool, Tablets is a great device. It's got multiple. I believe you can have 255 users on the tablet. I was told that by Microsoft. I believe everything Microsoft does. The Microsoft even bigger. I think that is one.
there more technical kinds of issues about the operating system you're interested in, Red State tablet? The book sequence, we had some experiments at the University of Texas, and about 30% of your files were adjusted by just by starting up that seems about 30% of your file consistent. Therefore, from a forensics point of view, the worst thing that can happen with the procedure system is when it's due by itself. So all that is you need to stay on state. That's why you have to use some hardware, blocking devices, or special devices that avoid the test together over time. Now the BIOS settings, I've observed BIOS is one manufacturer lies to you on a water gateway. It says boot from plug, So be careful about the BIOS process. XP time services are notoriously bad because XP actually will try to go across the network with Microsoft and get rid of all the authority in time. I know this is Microsoft, you hear about it on the clock, yet on the Windows, Microsoft time is pretty bad. So time is not a good thing. I don't spend a lot of time worried about time. NTP clocks, well aware that NTP, the network time protocol, is not investigation times is beyond the scope of this class, but those are during client-server conferences. If you want to have fun, you have to have an Excel spreadsheet to figure out, okay, my log file over here says this time, but what is the log time this client-server? And by the time you get finished, you get consumers. We all know about hash sets. Hash sets, yes, it's possible to spoof a hash set in MD5, and you can, I've been asked that at trial. Is it mathematically possible, Dr. Leapfrog, to change the MD5? Well, yes, but I've done, I've certainly been in that particular problem by actually doing three hashes. SHA-1, MD5, and SHA-256. That I always take a look at. In this case, we looked at any forensics tools. There were none in the system. There was applications, metadata. She did conceal media. Actually, it was enumerated on a device just like this. And the sound files were there. The way we tied the system was Diamond Cut, which was a unique application. This was really a compressor of files. It's designed to compress. Okay. With that, I've got 45 minutes. Let me show you one thing, wait and escape out of that for a second, and I want to show you how we found this on it. You break what? You break it? I'll leave the power on the computer. You want the power on the computer? Yeah. Okay, let's go back to the picture here. That was the picture here. Okay, you can see this slide here, the way this was moved across. Actually, what happened is she embedded this slide in a Word email and said, I will meet you where this airplane is. And the instructions were actually hidden. Of course, it was only the compressed file. The compressed file was further in the section split. So basically, you say that, please, particularly.
Are you finding specific computer forensic logs to be created, or is it mainly basing on precedents from previous cases?
Laws by definition really have to be made in two places. They're made in courts, which is really where I think they should be made, where legislators will try to pass legislation, which ultimately will be tested in courts. Unfortunately, this is the arena of going to court. And as your earlier discussions today discussed about how the, it was the NSA
NSA or CIA or whoever they are, or other people, of how they swept witnesses. It's also the proceeding in most statutes. I mean, in most court settings in the United States, they will not directly try to turn a suspect or just speak to family. In other words, that's why you see cases of like Enron suspects that are not necessarily being charged. They're charging their wife. They're charging their father with some tax violation to kind of squeeze the suspect. Unfortunately, one of the problems in the United States is they can't focus on the system of which the full digital forensics judicial procedure. And in our time, that's a long time. That's a long time. Now, what I think this whole discussion is about, from my perspective, is the kind of emerging tensions we have between security, forensics, and potentially a legislative kind of overreaction in the United States, particularly subsequent to 9/11, which is generally was a traumatic event. It was traumatic for the United States military. But we also have to be victims of potential terrorist devices. And also, those of you that are kind of curious about this, that a forensics judge was a French nationality, which is many of us are both part of it. And he had a question of law. I couldn't hear the question.
class, we really focused on this for a liturgical forensics evaluation. The tulip has other purposes also. We use this tool for things like actually doing quick incident response, where their suspect Trojan. Well, actually, I showed them a couple of things. Also, what I like about it is you can go to the registry and actually be a mobile person for this tool. Where they can use the Windows product, you can upload it very quickly.
One of the things I'm showing up here right now is remotely running the search and the hash functions. In an enterprise environment, it's very powerful to be able to load up 100 machines, run a hash function, and then have your baseline hash sets of your known images. Like we can see here, 2000 certified IIS baseline, right? Based on the MD5 hash, digital fingerprint. What I can then do is run a filter to remove known files and DLL cache files. So instead of looking at 20,000 files, now all I'm looking at are what are called notable hash sets. And these can be unauthorized applications.
Just take the tool, crypto tool, coinware, whatever you got.
We just hashed all the Win32 executables and Perl file soft packets for security. So that if I were to search our network and hash every file and compare that against our hash sets, I would be able to identify any packet sloan tools. And these are not of the executable setup file. This is actually installing the file and running a differential, pulling all those DLLs and files together and then hashing those. So it's actually on the disk, not the setup file.
There's always a rootkit question. Come on, we're waiting for the rootkit question. If you install a rootkit and it runs only in memory,
you've got distributed systems everywhere. They're moving on.
got to know that.